This is Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. Podcasts and players get ready for rating. I'll break down the list of moderators for this year's World of Podcasts. And if you don't know who's in the spotlight this week, I'll let McCree fill you in.
It's high noon.
This is episode 208.
When the servers go down, we'll tell you what's up. You're listening to Realm Maintenance.
Ladies and gentlemen, supports and sharpshooters, podcasters and podcastees, welcome to Realm Maintenance. I'm Ro, thank you as always for listening. I imagine a lot of you are still playing Legion, as I am, and, you know, we've had a few weeks to get our feet wet on the Broken Isles, and as of today, players now have access to Normal and Heroic Emerald Nightmare, as well as Mythic Keystone Dungeons, which, you know, either way is going to be a great way to get some great gear. A small heads up, though, for those of you planning to do Keystone Dungeons, the eye level cap for loot will still be at 850, but that's just for this week. Next week, once Mythic Rating is open, the cap for loot drops everywhere, including in the Keystone Dungeons, goes up to 895. Now, you'll also have to wait one more week if you're planning to do Raid Finder content, and that's actually what I want to talk about for a couple minutes. Last week I did a Twitter poll asking people if they were planning to do Raid Finder, and over a couple hundred of you answered, 76% of you said yes. And maybe this question seems like a rhetorical one to many of you, obviously. But not to me. You see, I'm actually in that 24% who will not be doing Raid Finder. At least, that's the plan as of right now. So, why am I not doing Raid Finder? Is it because I'm an elitist? Is it because I think Raid Finder sucks? Is it because I think Raid Finder is for noobs? No, that's not necessarily the case. Well, first off, Raid Finder drops eye level 835 loot, which of course can Warforge or Titanforge up to a higher eye level, but on average, there are basically no direct upgrades unless you get very lucky. It might be different for me if there were tier pieces involved with set bonuses and everything, but we're not going to see tier until Nighthold, which doesn't release until very early next year. So right now, the gear from Raid Finder just isn't all that appealing to me, especially since at this point, I've done just fine gearing up via world quests. I have 6 pieces of my class hall set all upgraded to eye level 840. I have several pieces of gear that are essentially mythic dungeon quality or better. I've got great relics for my artifact item levels like 870 something. Don't have a legendary yet. Not bitter about that at all. No, not at all. But the world quest system makes gearing so painless compared to what I had to endure to gear up using Raid Finder the past 2 expansions. Now, of course, the 2 biggest pulls to do Raid Finder are gearing up and just seeing the content, right? Seeing the story play out. Many of you who answered said that you're doing Raid Finder because your schedule doesn't allow you to join, you know, a regular raid group that does 4 to 6 or 6 to 8 hours a week raiding or even more than that. But you still want to do the content, you still want to see the story, and that's fine, you do you. I have nothing against people who do Raid Finder content. It's just not for me. Raid Finder, in my opinion, based on my experience, it did a lot of damage to my desire to raid in Warlords last year. Everything in Raid Finder and Warlords went down pretty quickly. I can't even remember that many boss encounters where you had to worry about stacks of dedication or whatever preservation, whatever that stack is that you get when you wipe to a boss. I hardly ever recall seeing any of those stacks because almost every boss we did was a one-shot. And since I was able to see the story on Raid Finder and gear up with a combination of Raid Finder and very easy garrison missions, there was just very little incentive to do raids on normal difficulty besides just the fact of doing it with my friends on Furt. Now, while the friends thing is great, and I love raiding with friends and people I know and having a fun time and joking and all that stuff, there are times when I feel that for me, that might not be enough. At least, I also noticed that it wasn't enough for some of the members in Furt, who were there for the beginning of a raid tier, but you know, after a few weeks, they decided, you know what, this just isn't for me, and they would bow out. No one thought anything negatively of them, it's just, it wasn't for everyone. gearing is not really an issue in Legion, especially based on how easy I've been able to gear up, hardly doing any dungeons at all, just doing world quests, doing the dungeon quests that are required for, like, professions and such like that. And because of that, I've decided to void Raid Finder, because at the end of the day, really, World of Warcraft is a game. Part of the pleasure that comes from the game, for me, is overcoming challenges. For many years, that challenge existed primarily in raiding. Some of my biggest thrills in WoW were beating Yogg-Saron for the first time in Old War, triumphing over the Lich King. Even some of the raid content in Cataclysm, getting the first kills on that was a fun time. But as things progressed, and Raid Finder was brought to us with Dragon Soul and beyond, something just changed, something just felt different, and raiding didn't seem to be as big a deal to me because I already had those victories on Raid Finder. So I'm challenging myself to keep myself away from Raid Finder. And while normal mode may not be the most challenging mode in the world, it's still quite a step up from Raid Finder. I want to beat these first raids of Legion on normal difficulty, and maybe higher. We'll see how that goes. I want to experience progression and be motivated by the opportunity to go from the first boss to the last boss of a raid and feel like I did something in a video game. I know that sounds kind of nerdy to some of you. Raid Finder does serve a purpose to a great number of people playing the game. World of Warcraft may not have the player base it still has without Raid Finder. But from my perspective, at the end of the day, Raid Finder really is just the lazy river of endgame content. And I'm not calling those of you who do Raid Finder lazy, not at all. I get why Raid Finder is around, and I understand why many of you are going to be running it next week. I just won't be one of them, at least not yet. I swear, if I find out that those of you doing Raid Finder are seeing legendaries raining from the skies, I may have to reconsider. Those are my thoughts on WoW this week and Raid Finder and all that. Of course, there's much more happening in and around the Blizzard universe of games, so let's quickly take a look at it as we go around the World of Warcraft and more in 80 seconds. World of Warcraft patch 7.1 is now available for testing on the PTR. Highlights of the patch include additional weekly Suramar quest content leading up to the release of the Nighthold raid, a fourth raiding with leashes focused on new pets obtained in Northrend raids, and the five-player Mythic Return to Karazhan dungeon. Paid battle tag name changes are now available for $10. If you haven't changed your battle tag once yet, you still have a free one at your disposal. Digital rewards for BlizzCon 2016 have been revealed. Attendees and virtual ticket holders will receive an exclusive Hearthstone card back, a Nexus Tiger Mountain Heroes of the Storm, Horde and Alliance-themed murky companion pets in WoW, a special Bastion skin in Overwatch, a classic Diablo pet in Diablo 3, and a surprise bonus for StarCraft II to be revealed at a later time. After 7 games and the Battle of Yogg-Saron Druids, Hot Meowth defeated Tare in the grand final of the Hearthstone America's Summer Championship. Hot Meowth advances to the World Championship at BlizzCon 2016. And finally, Senior Vice President of Story Franchise and Development Chris Metzen retired from Blizzard Entertainment at the age of 42, choosing to focus on his family in the foreseeable future. Metzen's influence on all of Blizzard's universes over the past 23 years is without comparison, and many have expressed their gratitude over the past several days. Blizzard will be creating and delivering a statue to Metzen in recognition of his contribution to the company. And while I really doubt he'll hear it here, although now he has a lot more time to listen to podcasts if he so chooses, I just want you to know that if it wasn't for Chris Metzen, many podcasts wouldn't be here. And without those podcasts, Realm Maintenance wouldn't be here. So personally, for me, thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. And that's your news, which brings us to our podcast clip of the week. Now, starting next week, I'm going to have a few weeks of podcast interviews that happen to be all from shows originating from Australia or New Zealand, so I figured I'd kind of kick off this oceanic focus by bringing you a clip from the Return of the Chaos Portal podcast, hosted by MacGyver. You can find the show on your podcast app of choice or at warcraft.chaosportalshow.com. My interview with the hosts of High Noon is coming up after this.
And it looks like you got the first rattle out of the box.
I did. Can't do artifact quest, hated by Moonglade. Ha! Okay. This has come in from the EU forums, actually. This was a druid by the name of Druar, who is part of the Convict Gaming EU Guild on Kazakh in the EU. They're a level 100 Tauren druid. And they write, I can't do the druid artifact quest because I'm hostile with the Cenarian Circle. Archdruid Hamel Roomtotem won't speak to me. Can you guys turn him into a neutral faction NPC, please? I know this is karma for the hours spent murdering Moonglade guards, but this is literally barring me entry from WoW Legion. I'm pretty sad right now. You are bad, yeah, and you should feel bad, Druar. Murdering Moonglade guards. Yeah, pretty much. This goes back to vanilla faction, which followed EverQuest faction standings a lot more. In EverQuest, for those who don't know, back in the distant past, when you were playing EverQuest, if you were questing or killing mobs for a faction, your faction standing with a whole bunch of other factions would go down. And unlike in WoW, where you can get to Exalted with pretty much every faction that you want, with the exception of maybe the Syndicate, you couldn't do that in EQ. If you went really high with one faction, you would go down with another faction, and there was no way to level them all up at the same time. Unlike if you want to be a Bloodsail Admiral and then also be Exalted with Everlook and all the goblin towns and places like that with the Booty Bay, you can actually do that with a lot of grinding. You couldn't do that in EverQuest. And so the original mechanics were that you had a bunch of factions and you could go to war with them and kill them if you wanted. Now, in the case of, you know, doing Bloodsail Admiral and that, you know, it made sense to go to war with, you know, the goblins of Booty Bay and then try and crawl and scrape up to them afterwards. Oh, I'm sorry for killing all your guards. Be friends now, yes. You could go to war with the Cenarian Circle. To what end, I don't know, other than just for the lulls. But that's what Druid did, apparently. A level 100 druid who would just rip through the ranks of druid guards in Moonglade, which is kind of sick when you think about it. But they're now paying the price for it, or they were paying the price for it.
In Overwatch, there are two words which inspire sheer panic in myself, and I imagine a number of you listening to this show.
It's high noon.
It's not only a time of day that I will never look at the same way again, though. High Noon is the name of one of the podcasts out there covering Blizzard's first-person shooter. And here this week to talk about their show and the state of the game are the hosts of High Noon. They are Blevins and Deathblow. Welcome to the show, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing great, Will. How are you?
I am doing great. It's good to be talking about Overwatch again, although I feel like I'm going to be a little bit out of my comfort zone because as I talk to you guys in the a bit pre-show leading up to this interview, I am very much a casual Overwatch player. I am the guy who picks Junkrat and loves getting plays of the game when the Riptire blows away three or four unsuspecting people and then thinks it's so awesome that, oh, hey, I'll buy the legendary skin. And then I find out that, oh, hey, I'm playing against other Junkrats that are using the same exact skin. I'm not that legendary after all. But before we get into, you know, the format and the show and everything like that, usually I ask people, how did the show get started? But I want to kind of approach it from a different angle. So, Blevins, I want to simply ask you, what is it about Overwatch that compelled you to create the High Noon podcast?
It's going to sound cheesy and, you know, take it for what it's worth. But when I saw that original cinematic, I was blown away, honestly. We hadn't seen any new IPs from Blizzard in, I don't even remember how many years, multiple years. So seeing something new from Blizzard was great. Having it, and I apologize, but having it not be like Warcraft or World of Warcraft related was kind of a good thing for me.
That's fine.
And not necessarily StarCraft related or Diablo related. It was something completely new, and that was great. I had taken many years off of first person shooters and shooters in general. I used to play a lot of Halo, and a lot of Gears of War as well. So I really longed, and as well as a little bit of TF2 as well. But And I was really happy to see Blizzard's take on the first-person shooter and even that specifically TF2 style of shooter.
How about you, Deathblow?
Well, I come from a little bit of a different spectrum than the Blevins does. I am pretty much a Blizzard fanboy. Have no fear if you are a WoW player. We do talk a little bit about it on random occasion when I bring it up, but... you know, I really have followed almost everything they've done, Diablo, Hearthstone, you know, everything, and except with one exception, that's StarCraft. Just never got into that one personally. But, you know, we did a Hearthstone podcast a while back, and when we stopped doing that, I really enjoy podcasting, so I was looking for an opportunity to get back into it. And Overwatch, just like the Blevins, it just from the moment they started talking about it and releasing things about it, I knew it was a game I was going to really get into and want to sink my teeth into. And I had a co-host right there waiting for me, so it was a pretty easy decision for us, I think.
Yeah, Overwatch definitely took a fair bit of my time, and it occupied a great space that was left vacant by the lack of content in World of Warcraft for a great period of time. Now that Legion kind of has a stranglehold on me, I'm practically playing that and hardly anything else right now. But I still have a lot of love for Overwatch, and it's only a matter of time before I finally get tired of class order hall missions and dailies and all that stuff. And I'm sure I'll be finding my way back into Overwatch really soon. Meanwhile, you guys are talking about the game. It's going on. It's going strong. Blevins, can you tell my listeners a little bit more about the show? What is the format of a typical episode of High Noon?
Well, at a high level, we're probably about 2% content and 98% random tangents. No, I'm kidding.
Episode 37 would be a good example of that.
That is true. We had Hexagrams on, for those of you who aren't aware of Hexagrams. He is a caster for the Gosu Gamers Overwatch tournaments. Super cool guy. Great friend of the show. But yes, we do go on a lot of tangents, but the normal format of the show is going to be, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what we did last week. We try to make the connection as blatantly obvious as possible, that we want to be your friends, that we like to interact with you. That's kind of our MO. Then we go into any sort of tournaments that went on. We're talking about the, you know, the top maybe three or four tournaments real quick, just some sandblast results of the tournaments that happened over the week and the weekend. And then we're going to talk about any sort of either new meta changes or patch notes or anything that could affect the competitive scene in any way. That's where I think the bulk of what we're talking about ends up happening, whether it's you know, someone actually decided to play Mei on attack this week, or you know, Anna's starting to see play. We're going to try to talk about any of those sorts of nuances, as well as the just standard tournament results as well.
Now, as you mentioned, and as the show is advertised, High Noon is an Overwatch podcast that focuses on competitive play, whether it's esports related or just, you know, gaming in competitive mode and learning how to play at a higher level. Deathblow, that being said, what do you feel someone who's more casual in their approach to Overwatch, like myself, can learn or enjoy from listening to any episode of High Noon?
Well, you know, we really do try to cover everything that happens in the esports world on the show. So we kind of try to make it so that you can, it's okay to miss a tournament, you know, or miss an entire weekend if you go out of town or something like that. As long as you catch up and listen to the podcast that week, you should be able to get a synopsis of everything that happened and everything that you missed while you were gone. So I, at least from my perspective, that's really what we try to do, you know, let you know what the meta is doing, you know, on a week to week basis, any shifts that are happening, things like that. So you can kind of use it as a fill in or a recap or a reminder if you were around and watched it.
Yeah, and we've actually even had a lot of folks, a lot of our fans reach out and be like, hey, you know, I don't have a lot of time on the weekends to watch the tournaments, or, you know, I'm a console player, I don't really watch Twitch, I don't do this, but I, you know, I'm kind of interested in esports, and you guys do a really good job of basically providing the headlines and the results for the week. So a lot of folks that aren't even necessarily like super focused in on esports, but just want to kind of passively know what's going on, have told us that they like that aspect of the show as well.
Yeah, and, you know, hearing about the esports side, that, like I said, having listened to a couple episodes, it sounds like there's a lot of stuff happening as far as Overwatch esports goes. There's plenty of tournaments going on. In fact, some even might say there is an abundance of esports tournaments when it comes to Overwatch, far more than the big BlizzCon event that's coming up. Things where definitely a lot of money is on the line, a lot of familiar team names from other, you know, esports, like you hear Tempo Storm, you hear Cloud9, you hear Dignitas and all that. Just in your opinion, Blevins, how healthy is the state of the esports scene for Overwatch? Do you feel it is a greater success for Blizzard than, say, Heroes of the Storm has been in that regard? Or if not, will it be? Just how do you feel about Overwatch esports right now?
Yeah, so I definitely am feeling great about Overwatch esports. I can say that with the utmost amount of confidence. You know, Death and I have been following the scene since, you know, there was a scene to follow. You know, I think the first couple of weeks we started, there weren't even like tournaments going on, or maybe like one or two. We were just talking about like theory and stuff. So, you know, we've seen it since the very beginning, and thinking back to those days where it was like, okay, guys, big announcement. We're going to get the Gosu Gamers weekly tournaments, and we're hoping they're going to run this whole month. And now they just did their 19th week for EU and NA, is just kind of crazy to think where everything's come. I think there was like, probably within the last 2 weeks, like 20 something tournaments that went on. Wow. So in terms, yeah, it's crazy. Like every week I go to Gosu or go to the other tournament page, because I can't watch every tournament. Like, it's gotten to the point where it's just not, there's not
Can
enough time.
Watch in, every tournament?
No, there's not enough time in the week. I was watching the finals of the Gosu Gamers EU weekly today at work, and I'm watching it on 2x speed, so now I'm used to Ask Joshy's voice at 2x speed. Like, I can't go back to listening at regular speed. But no, seriously, there are so many tournaments going on. And I think, like you mentioned, compared to Heroes of the Storm, it's kind of tough, because I think that Heroes of the Storm has done a lot of things good. I think they've done a lot of things kind of suboptimally. I think that in terms of promotion of the game, and marketing and whatnot, from the onset, Overwatch has just been phenomenal. In terms of their dev team being open and listening to feedback and really planning with competitive in mind, I think Overwatch has done great. Now, I didn't follow and haven't followed Heroes of the Storm as closely, obviously, as Overwatch, but I do follow from time to time, and I watch tournaments from time to time. There are a lot of good tournaments that go out there, that go on. There's a lot of good competition and a lot of great production and casters. You know, Grubby, one of my all-time favorite esports personalities, Kaldor, just a fantastic esports personality. I really kind of wish that he was in Overwatch, just because I love his enthusiasm. I love his casting. I mean, I love a lot of the casters that are in Overwatch as well, but Kaldor is just one of those great, like, you just want to hear him talk about something he loves so much, and Heroes is that. But I think there's a lot of things behind the scenes and a lot of missteps that Heroes of the Storm has taken, and you know, that kind of led to a few of the teams you know, dropping out. I know Cloud9, this is, you know, old news now, but they dropped out, Tempo dropped out as well. You know, I haven't really followed it enough. Maybe they've re-signed teams and whatnot, but I think a lot of people were dropping out because there was
Tempo,
some...
So Tempo Storm basically acquired the best team in Korea.
Okay.
So now the new Tempo Storm is basically the team to beat worldwide, or at least that's how some people feel. It's interesting that you bring up the whole shuffling thing, because I was going to bring this back to Overwatch. I was wondering, is there that same kind of team shuffling in Overwatch right now? Is the Overwatch esports scene such that you are seeing team participants come and go with great frequency, or is there a fair bit of stability when it comes to team competition and the rosters?
Yeah, so it is definitely still the wild, wild west in terms of Overwatch for teams as well. There are a couple of teams, and maybe Death can chime in at some point because I'm blanking right now on team names. There's a couple of teams that have been, I think Reunited has been one that has been pretty consistent throughout, but Cloud9 has been pretty consistent since they became Cloud9 as well. But, you know, every week it seems like a new organization is coming in. We had a little bit of a debacle with Team Solo Mid acquiring a team, and then like comically shortly after they dropped their team because they found out some allegations, and now TSM hasn't picked up another team since then. But there's definitely teams that are organizations that are picking up teams. Players are moving, but we're not seeing as much the like, okay, we tried to do an Overwatch team, the return on investment isn't there, we're not seeing it, we don't see Overwatch esports, we're dropping out of the scene completely. That we're not seeing.
It looks like there's more money in Overwatch than there was in, say, Heroes and stuff.
Yeah, it seems like there maybe, and if not even necessarily more money, more potential. That's at least what it seems like from the organizational standpoint in terms of what we're seeing from teams.
Deathblow, just to kind of help educate me, right now in the esports scene of Overwatch, who are the top teams to watch both in North America and worldwide? Like, if I was to get into Overwatch esports, which team should I be paying attention to? Who's on fire right now? Who are the teams to watch going into the whole big event coming up at BlizzCon and all the stuff that's happening before and after that?
Sure. At the moment, we have a bit of a powerhouse on the NA side of things. Team Envious has lost literally one time since the game has been released in competitive. So they're kind of the unquestioned top dog at the moment, and rightfully so. They did lose to Rogue, which is, the Blevins is a big fan of them as his favorite player, Tavik, a.k.a. Pluppy, on their team. But, also on the NA side of things, you have Cloud9, Fnatic, and then you start to see things open up a little bit more. You have FaZe Clan, NRG, which is Seagull's team, a very, very popular streamer, Team Liquid, Complexity, and Tempo Storm also recently signed an NA team. Over on the EU side, you have Rogue, who won the big
Atlantic Showdown.
Yeah, the Atlantic Showdown, the ESL Atlantic Showdown. It was a big LAN a couple weekends ago. Also, Reunited is kind of the consummate second place in every tournament they enter. They always get to the finals, never seem to win it. And they're over on the EU side. The Blevins mentioned them as having a very consistent roster. They really only changed one player around. Too Easy left the team, and then they brought in Kib, and that's been their only change in there since before the game came out in beta. You also have Misfits, Luminosity, Dignitas, which used to be Creation Esports, kind of rounds things out over there. But there's also, in the last 2 weeks, we're seeing the Koreans kind of come into things a little bit. They've been playing in some of the NA tournaments, doing really, really well. So a lot of fun kind of to, give you some current events in Overwatch. It's a lot of fun to watch those guys try to establish themselves with their unique play style and sometimes unique group compositions as well.
It's fascinating hearing that answer because I've heard half a dozen names that sound familiar in terms of team names and a whole bunch of names that it's just like, what? it's almost like listening to trigonometry. But that being said, I mean, that's just a testament to how big the snowball that is Overwatch esports has become, and it shows really no signs of stopping. Of course, Overwatch just got into Season 2 of competitive play not long ago, and Deathblow, starting off with you here, from your point of view, what is it that you like the most and the least about the changes that have come with Season 2, the latest patch, the new map, and just the changes in general to competitive mode and how ranking is done?
Sure. So my favorite thing actually about the changes has been a big surprise to me personally because I was dreading it. I thought it was a bad decision. And that's when they changed the way payload maps work to use the time bank system now. So it's not, I really wanted them to go into stopwatches, which is what a lot of the tournaments used. But now you have this.
So can you explain what the time bank is?
Sure. Time bank essentially says you have 9 minutes to complete the map. however much time is left when you complete the map is however much time you have when you start over again for your second attempt. So let's say both teams successfully escort the payload the entire duration of the map. You restart, and then however much time you had left is how long each team goes. So there's a distinct advantage to finish faster. But at the same time, the way overtime works in Overwatch, you know that the last second can last minutes as long as you stay on the payload and keep extending overtime. So there's this really interesting and fun snowball-y impact that we've seen since the change has been made into the tournament scene as well, because they have adopted it. And I've had the same experiences in playing it myself. And that's just been a whole lot of fun for me so far, is to kind of take a system I didn't think would work that well for the game mode and just be really pleasantly surprised by it. So that was a lot of fun. My least favorite thing is that May is viable. That's really, really unfortunate.
Is it simply because her Blizzard is larger? I know that's one of the more recent changes.
Yeah, it's larger, and its area of effect isn't blocked by a barrier or a shield, so you can't line of sight it once the circle's drawn, essentially. So that's really the only changes they made to her, but the reason she's so good is just because the ice wall separates, you know, a couple players from the rest of their team, and then you have a 6v2, and then when the wall drops, you have a 6v4. It is really kind of the way you draw it up as a Mei player. So she's just been really good at stalling, and when the game's so much about time, you know, the fact that she can just ice block on the point to extend the timer and really delay things is really valuable.
That's a good point. Blevins, how about you? What's your big takeaways? What are you loving about Season 2? Or is there anything about Season 2 that you might not necessarily be all that big a fan of?
Yeah, so Death mentioned that the changes to payload have made it a lot better, but I think the changes to capture point, two CP maps has made those maps super playable. Those changes might have happened a little bit before Season 2, but even so, before we would all dread Volskaya, we would dread Anubis, which were the and we would dread Hanamura, some of which we still dread, but we would dread those maps because it was just such a such an awful time to play on them, and you'd end up defending. You'd play these long maps, and they'd either go super long or they'd go super short, and there was really no. It just never felt good, win or lose. Now they switch up the format a little bit. It's a lot like the time bank system for payload now, so those maps are a lot easier to play. In terms of what I don't like, just having played, I played a lot more Season 2 than I did Season 1, and it feels so much more like a grind. It might just be because we're only going up a couple of points each, and we can actually see the points instead of it being a bar. It honestly could literally just be
5,000 just seems like a bigger mountain to climb.
Exactly. It probably is just a psychological thing, and it might also be that I have been wanting to play more, so I've been wanting to queue solo more, and queuing solo is just a bad idea. Like, as much as I want to play competitive, I want to be able to not scream into a pillow at night, so I'm trying to limit the amount of solo queue I'm playing. Though, I mean, that's the same for any season, but it just seems like the people are coming out of the woodwork to troll me on my team in Season 2. I don't know. It just feels awful.
Do you agree with that, Deathblow? Are you experiencing kind of the same kind of stuff there going on?
I'm not experiencing it because I refuse to solo queue.
Be smart.
I've been experiencing it for quite some time. In all seriousness, though, I've been trying to push my own rank a little bit. I'm the one of the two of us that would, you know, really aspire to make it onto a roster and be able to compete in some of these esports tournaments. So it would be very beneficial for me to have a higher ranking, and I've been really trying to grind it out. I've just been kind of fortunate this season to, you know, I have at least a couple of guys where I can go in and queue, but I try to keep my groups to 2 to 3. I think I have a much better win rate, close to 60 to 65% in that range when I queue with 2 or 3 people. And if I queue with one, it's only, you know, 55 or a little over 50. And then when I queue with 4, it's actually a little bit below 50. Mm-hmm. just the coordination and the level of competition is there. And I'll queue 6v6 all day. I don't care what my win rate is. I'll lose nonstop if it's a team I'm going to be competing with or something like that. But right now, when all I'm really trying to do is work on my ranking, it's kind of important, I think, to keep it to 2 to 3 players.
Blevins, can you let my listeners know where, when, and how they can get connected to your show?
Yeah, so we have all of our links and whatnot on our website over at highnoonpodcast.com. You can always tweet at us at highnoonpodcast on Twitter. We go live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern over at twitch.tv/theblevins.
All right. Once again, Blevins, Deathblow, thank you for being on the show this week. And good luck in the rest of Season 2 and everything esports-wise that goes along the rest of the year.
You too.
Thank you so much, Ro. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks again to Blevins and Deathblow for being on the show this week. Folks, this interview ran a little longer than most of the interviews that I conduct, and as such, I cut the last, 7 or 8 minutes from it. I am going to post the interview in its entirety at realm-maintenance.com if you want to check it out. You'll probably want to skip ahead about 22, 23 minutes or so to get to the part that you did not hear on today's podcast. With that out of the way, let's move on to this week's podcast news. Now, earlier in the show, I did mention the return of the Chaos Portal podcast, but that's not the only show that's back. We're just several weeks from BlizzCon, and it's once again time for the BlizzCon Countdown. Episode 64 of the show includes an interview with Convert to Raid co-host Darius, a man with a special set of skills, including extensive experience working with the large impromptu networks created for computer gaming conventions and competitions, like what you find at BlizzCon. You can find out more by checking out the show on your app of choice or at BlizzConCountdown.com. For updates on this podcast over the next couple of months, I suggest you follow the show on Twitter at BlizzConCD. Speaking of Convert to Raid, you'll find 2 new episodes on the CTR feed this week. In addition to episode 9 of the Battle.net News, you'll also be able to catch an episode on Getting Raid Ready, featuring Tapha and Tovo from Line of Sight Gaming. The Emerald Nightmare awaits, and so does this special report. You can check out the podcast for Raiders in the World of Warcraft at ConvertToRaid.com. I'd also suggest checking out the latest episode of Battletagged if you're interested in preparing yourself for the Emerald Nightmare. Episode 21 of that show goes into more detail about additional resources and guides that are at your disposal. You can find that show at Battletagged.com. Episode 85 of The Meeting Stone pays homage to the world builder Chris Metzen and celebrates the next adventure in his life. They're also dusting off the Mythic Dungeon Keystone playbook, which is going live as you hear this. The fire is hot at the Meeting Stone, and you can find your way there at iTunes or themeetingstone.com. 2 of my personal favorite podcasts meet up at the Azeroth Roundtable on episode 182 when Ben and John welcome Frosty and Kaz from the Worgen's Howl. You'll hear all about BlizzCon costumes, Legion questing, alternate race options, and much more. The discussion includes a little bit of everything. You can listen to Azeroth Roundtable on iTunes, TuneIn, or azerothroundtable.com, and follow at AzerothRT for more updates. The first few weeks of any expansion provide a great opportunity to make gold in the World of Warcraft, and if you're interested in that aspect of the game, you may want to download episode 10 of the Goblin Goldcast. On their first double-digit show, Dex and Mac talk about the importance of diversification when building your gold-making portfolio in WoW. You can find the show at GoblinGoldcast.com. Turning our attention to Hearthstone, there's a few shows that may catch your interest this week. Well-known professional poker player Daniel Negreanu knows a thing or two about Hearthstone, and he shares his insight as a guest on a special episode of The Angry Chicken. You can find episode 172 of the show on your app of choice or always at amove.tv. One of the more interesting events in the esports scene took place not too long ago when 2014 world champion Firebat hosted the Batstone Tournament, a community event which included card bans from both players and spectators, causing the participants to think quite differently about their deck building. Firebat joins Chanman, Raynad, and Noxious on episode 87 of Valuetown to talk about Batstone, the most recent patch update, and much more. You can listen to Valuetown on iTunes and Stitcher, and as always, you can go to youtube.com/ChanmanV to watch the video cast in its entirety. Follow the show on Twitter at ValuetownGG. The most recent Hearthstone patch brought with it significant changes to the arena format as well, as a number of cards will no longer be available in the draft process. Merps and Adwicta talk about this brave new world for arena enthusiasts on episode 58. Listen to the show on your app of choice, and be sure to follow at ADWCTA on Twitter for further updates. Really quick, I want to remind you folks once again that the Westmarch Workshop released its 100th episode just days ago. Congrats to Nineball and Leviathan on their long-running Diablo 3 podcast. Moving on to the Nexus, the Zord Lords talk about the release of Machines of War on episode 81 of Lords of the Storm, which you can listen to at lordsofthestorm.libsyn.com. This episode also features plenty of discussion over the recent Reddit Q&A, so be sure to check it out if you're into that. You can follow the show on Twitter at Lords of the Storm. Rob and Andres dive deep once again and focus on a specific Overwatch hero on the latest episode of the Omnic Lab. This time around, Zarya is in the spotlight, and you'll learn all about just how diverse a character she is and why she's a highly capable tank that can support your team's push on the payload. Listen to the show in all the usual places or at omniclab.com. And last but certainly not least, moderators and panelists have been announced for this year's World of Podcast event, taking place the night before BlizzCon 2016 at the Con Before the Storm. Moderators of this special event include Scott Johnson from Core for the Heroes of the Storm panel, Garrett Weinzel from The Angry Chicken for Hearthstone, Bay from Final Boss for World of Warcraft, John Horstman from The Payload for Overwatch, and Root from Hearthcast for the podcasting panel. Now, each of these panels has a number of participants from a variety of shows, and if I were to tell you every single participant, I would be here a while. You can find out the entire roster, as well as the schedule for the panels, by going to conbeforestorm.com and clicking on the World of Podcasts link at the top. Now, of course, as one of the planners for this event, I'm obviously a little bit biased, but seriously, this might be the biggest World of Podcasts yet. I'm really excited about what we have lined up for you. I'll give you more details on how you can listen to World of Podcasts in the coming weeks. And that's your podcast news. I'll be back to wrap up the show after this.
Oh, Aludra the Mage here.
And I'm Ben the Mage. Hey, Aludra, 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 Aludra. Check it out. I have a corgi.
Nice.
But, Aludra, it's a corgi. Look at that face.
Yeah, Ben. I have one, too. She has the same face.
But, I mean, look at him. Look at him. He's all cute and stumpy.
Whoa, 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 Ben. That's sizest. Whoa. You go over there. And while Ben thinks about how battle pets have a right to come in all shapes and sizes, listen to Battle Pets number 95. Stumpers is best corgi, where we talk boss battles, zone spotlights, and talk way, way too much about how much fun we're having in Legion as a whole.
Look, I'm not being sizist. I mean, I love my Ethereal Soul Trader as much as my Winter's Little Helper. I'm just talking about how the corgi is all stumpy.
Okay, it's back to Battle Pen sensitivity training for you, Ben. What's next? Going to comment on my little Teary's wingspan?
All I'm saying is that some lofty Librams have a higher word count than others.
Wow, Ben. Just wow.
And that sound means your update is complete. It's time to press the play button and continue to get salty about the lack of a legendary drop for my Warlock. Now, I continue to complain that I don't have a legendary yet. Honestly, I'm pretty sure that 90% of players in Legion do not have a legendary yet. Still, I can complain, I can whine, because it's what WoW players do. And since I'm whining about it, I know that by the time you hear this, a legendary will probably drop, and I'll be happy, and then I'll find out that is probably the worst legendary I could have received, and the salt will continue to flow ever forward. As always, thank you for listening this week. If you'd like to support what I'm doing here, you can go to patreon.com/realmpodcast. Of course, there's still some time left to buy a Realm Maintenance t-shirt, sweater, or even a coffee mug. If you'd like to get one of these things, you can go to teespring.com/realmpodcast2016. The profits from this sale go specifically toward items I'll be giving away both at BlizzCon and to listeners of the BlizzCon episode of this show. The Realm Maintenance Podcast can be found on most podcasting apps, including TuneIn Radio, which recently added the show. I also encourage you to check out realm-maintenance.com, where you can find not only the weekly podcast roundup, but a directory of most podcasts out there covering your favorite Blizzard franchises. If you're a podcaster and have news about your show or a promo to send in, or if you're just a listener with questions about Blizzard games or podcasts for those games, send those emails to realmpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Realm Podcast or follow myself at Rowow, spelled R-H-O-W-O-W. Next week, it's the only Hearthstone show to release over 100 episodes in just 9 months. The Walk to Work podcast kicks off a 3-week focus on Oceanic offerings, and Ray Walkinshaw will be my guest. Until then, I've been Ro, you've been you, and Realm Maintenance has been completed. This podcast has been the presentation of Realm Maintenance Productions, copyright 2016, and is distributed by Signals Media. You can find this show and other great podcasts at signalsmedia.com. Certain audio portions of this podcast belong entirely to Blizzard Entertainment, and no copyright infringement is intended. Thanks again to the Blevins and Deathflow from High Noon for being on the show this week. Thanks to everyone in the community for the retweets and for getting the word out about the show. And as always, thanks to you for listening. It's the end of the show, and that means it's once again time for the roundup. This is an insanely quick rundown of every Blizzard podcast I'm aware of that's produced a show between September 11th and 17th of 2016. For general Blizzard podcasts, we have All Things Azeroth, Battletag, Blizzard Watch, Blue Recluse, Chicks a Click, Convert to Ray Presents, Battle.net News, Epic Fail, Geeks of Azeroth, Hearthcast, The Instance, Lightning Balls, The Sundering, and Torn Think Tank. World of Warcraft shows include 30-Minute Cooldown, Adventures in Azeroth, Azeroth Roundtable, Battle Pets, Battle Res Bears, Behind the Avatar, The Converted, Control Out WoW, Dalaran Academy, Daughters of Azeroth, Girls Gone WoW, Goblin Goldcast, Horde for Life, Hunting Party Podcast, Lion's Pride Tavern, Lore Watch, Pwncast, Raid Chat, Raiding with Leisha, Raided Battleground, Reigns of Azeroth, The Starting Zone, Stopcast, Tankcast, Unshackled Fury, Warcraft Nightly News, The Worgen's Howl, World of Warcast, WoW Challenges, WoW Talk, and Your WoW Money. Inside the Tavern for Hearthstone, we have 1600 Dust, the Angry Chicken, Angry Chicken Brawl, Coin Concede, Golden Wisp, Happy Hearthstone, Hearth Coach, Hero Power Cast, The Innervated, Light Forge, Legend of the Innkeeper, Meta Meltdown, Never Legend, Top Deck Kings, Value Town, Velen's Chosen, Walk to Work, and Well Met. Your three Diablo podcasts this week are Diablo 3 Podcast, Cool Story Bro, and Westmarch Workshop. Heroes of the Storm podcasts include Core, Dirty Casual, Heroes Forge, Heroes Radio, Heroes of the Storm Power Hour, Hots Cast, Into the Nexus, and Lords of the Storm. And finally, for Overwatch, we have The Cavalry, The Guardians, Heroes Never Die, High Noon, Omnic Lab, The Overcast, Overplay, The Overview, Halo Podcast, Uberview, and Watchpoint. For links to all of these shows and archives of this podcast, go to realm-maintenance.com.
This podcast is a part of the Signals Media All-Star Network. For more information on this and other fine shows, go to signalsmedia.com. It's okay to stick our stuff in your ears.
Really?